The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Leading off with the big story of the day, Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Anthony hit by Borrego. Anthony still out of throw with the net. Loose puck, they score! It popped out for Nichushkin, and it's time! Landeskog, as he's falling, made the pass. Shot, they score! Sam Girard got it through! Colorado has their first lead. Here's Manson. Bennington's reset. Manson scores! Josh Manson wins game one!
Game 2 gets underway tonight as Mission 16W continues to roll on here on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan. Matt Smith in for DMAC alongside Tyler Palumbis today. Tyler, Game 2 is tonight, and the Avs, I think you can very appropriately say, escaped with Game 1. Very appropriately.
You know, I've heard a lot of people say that. I feel like the Blues escaped an absolute beatdown.
I think
that's what it felt like to me. I mean, the Avalanche, yeah, they did dodge a bullet a little bit. They dodged a very what would have been an extreme upset, and it easily could have happened. By the time you get to overtime, Lord knows what's going to happen. And the Avalanche, you know, despite the five posts that they hit, I don't know how those posts got so big, but despite those five posts that they hit, they did miss a lot of opportunities. There's no question. They probably were not at their absolute best, but they dominated that game, man. No doubt. They had 54 shots on net or on goal, and including 13 in overtime. So I keep hearing people say that the Avalanche escaped. I'm like, forget that. The Avalanche dominated that game.
Bennington was a razor's edge from stealing that game, despite the fact that the Avs, in shot attempts, dominated them. I think it was 106-45 overall, and they dominated them in actual shots on goal, 54-25. So, yeah, the Avs sustained pressure for, you know, the second and third period. I got to credit St. Louis because I was in the building. Zach and I were in the building on Tuesday, and looking forward to having you there with us tonight.
Yeah.
When was the last time you went to an NHL game?
It's been a while. I went in college a few times, but honestly, it's been a decade, maybe.
Did you go to any of those games on their run? In 01,
yes.
80, 95?
Well, yeah, I went in high school. I went to a few. 95 was before high school for me.
Right.
But we did go to a couple of playoff games when I was younger, and I'll never forget the atmosphere. I mean, it's one of those things that it sticks with you the rest of your life.
No doubt.
And then in college, my roommate and I, we went down there for a couple of games. We actually had nicer tickets. We went down there and we bartered our way all the way up to the top row. And we did that intentionally because we were trying to make a few bucks.
Well, liquor money.
We bartered our way all the way up to the top row. We did that for a couple of games, but it's been a long time, man. So I'm really excited.
Well, I'm really excited that you're coming with us tonight. Thank you. And we want to thank our listeners in Wheat Ridge for making 104.3 The Fan a part of your day. I have to go back to the first period of Game 1 because when you're talking about this Avalanche team, and I've kind of seen, which is fascinating to me, over the last 2 days, the national perception change. We were hearing, Avs in 6, Avs in 7, maybe Blues in 7. We heard that from a lot of people. You even heard the Avs themselves talking about what a long, tough series this was going to be.
Yeah.
And certainly, we expect them to say that. We expect them to say the right things and to pay respect to their opponent before going to battle with them over the course of the 7-game series. Or best of 7 series, I should say. But here's the thing. The nation gets it. Everybody's seen the light now. The numbers that the Avalanche put up against St. Louis, coupled with the things
absolute beatdown.
No doubt. Coupled with the things they did and the performances they gave in the first round, have people really believing. In fact, I heard today on the emergency episode they uploaded of Spit and Chicklets, which is the hockey podcast on Barstool Sports with Paul Bissonnette and Ryan Whitney. Those guys have seen the light. They were all like, you know, Berube's a great coach. He can take this team, you know, but they've seen the light now.
Right.
They think the Avs are ready to hoist the cup already. That's what they said verbatim today. So when I look at this, it's all about taking it one game at a time. Because, Tyler, and I'm curious on your perspective, that how do you handle a team that you expect to win every single night, and if you don't, you know something went wrong. How do you address that on the course of a championship run when you've never done that before?
Yeah, you know, I've never been on that team. So, I mean, I don't know from personal experience. I've literally never been on a team that we were that good, including the Super Bowl year. I mean, we survived a lot of games. A lot. I mean, right. In particular, like I've talked about that Cleveland game 100 different times. We lost that game 12 different times over. We had no business winning that thing. We were a really good team, and we expected to win a lot of games because we had Peyton Manning as our quarterback.
Yeah, that helps.
But we were not by any means the Colorado Avalanche. That's not what we were doing. We had a defense that was playing like the Colorado Avalanche, but our offense was not holding up our end of the bargain. So I've never been on a team like that. We had Gabe on our show.
Earlier this week.
Monday. Yeah. We had Gabe Landeskog on our show on Monday, and I kind of asked him that question because, you know, you started out the season, and they were the odds-on favorites to win the Cup, and then you dominated all year long except for the final week or so.
Right.
And, you know, forget that. They turned the switch off for a week, right?
Yep.
So they have been on top all year long, and I asked him, do you lean into that, or do you try to find the underdog mentality? Do you lean into all the weapons that you've got? And more or less his answer, like he didn't quite come out as direct as I'm about to say it, but more or less his answer was, oh, we know how talented we are.
Yeah.
We got the weapons. We know exactly what we've got. We've got lots of confidence. It's not arrogance, but it's confidence, and we expect our guys to show up. So, you know, I think when you play the Blues, there's a small part of me that looks at this like, I don't know. Everybody's acting like that was the Blues' best shot. I think the Avalanche got unlucky for sure. I know a lot of people are saying you hit the post, that's skill. Forget that, whatever. I think that's unlucky.
It's part of hockey.
Okay? Yeah. I think that's unlucky. Those should have gone in. But I'm afraid that you have not seen the Blues' best effort. Now, you saw Jordan Binnington play out of his mind.
That was his best effort.
He played fantastic.
No doubt.
And by the way, anybody, despite your best effort, when you've got that many shots on net, you're gonna let through three or four. That's going to happen. But I am actually a little bit afraid that we're all sitting here talking about the Blues, like, oh, that's the best that they've got. Dude, that is an offensive powerhouse. The Blues are a powerhouse on the offensive side of the ice, and they did not show it. I mean, the Avalanche controlled the possession. I mean, the puck time down there in their end of the ice. I mean, they were looking, they had that clock up there. It was 30, 40 seconds every single time the Avalanche went down there. So there is a part of me that's wondering, have we actually seen the Blues' best effort yet? Because they didn't show up on the offensive end like they have throughout the season.
Well, I'll tell you what I think about that, but also let you know that we're going to be speaking to the St. Louis Blues radio play-by-play voice to get his take and what the Blues might be adjusting for Game 2, because here's where I was so impressed with what St. Louis did in Game 1. They said, all right, first of all, it was a lucky bounce and a fantastic play by Ryan O'Reilly to put him up 1-0 first 5 minutes.
And of course, he had to be the one.
Of course it was.
Of course it was Ryan O'Reilly that within the first 5 minutes, the Avalanche are trailing. They only trailed for about a minute and a half or 2 minutes of the first series, whatever that was.
Right.
Was that Game 4? Yeah, Game 4. And they only trailed for a couple minutes. But, I mean, you start out the series, Ryan O'Reilly sneaks one in, and you're like, uh-oh, ruh-roh, that's not the way it's supposed to be going.
Right. And I think what was great about what St. Louis did is they threw the Avs a different look, because that's what Vegas did in Game 3 last year. They waited till Game 3 to make adjustments. And what I think is so fascinating about what St. Louis did tonight is they said, all right, what we're going to do is we're just going to sit on the puck. They scored. They really were deliberate with their rush. So you could see, you heard the fans booing, right? I'm sure you heard it if you were watching the game, that they were kind of standing behind their net, waiting for a while for things to break out. And in the process, it's just like running your 4 minute offense, right? You're trying to kill the clock. You're just trying to get to the end of the period.
Yep.
And so it was fascinating. You look at the advanced numbers, very even first period. From then on out, the Avs absolutely dominated them. The high danger chances, which are grade A scoring chances, not just shots on goal, the best ones. Third period, overtime. Avs led 17-1. How many times do you think a goaltender is going to be able to stop 17 high danger chances?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not sustainable. It's not at all. You know, what the Blues did, what the thing that scared me a little bit was when the first ended and the Blues played penalty free, they weren't in the box at all. I was like, okay, now I'm a little bit nervous, because they probably did watch. They probably did learn. They probably did realize, hey, if we end up in the box, the Avs kill people. That's when they absolutely crush people. Avs didn't take advantage of the couple opportunities that they had. And then at the end of the game, they had what should have been a great penalty kill. They had the line change. It ended up getting sloppy. They ended up giving a goal right at the end of the game. But the Blues, what they really did well was they stayed out of the box. And that did scare me a little bit, because the Avalanche are by far at their best when they're playing with an
man advantage.
Man.
Absolutely. And I think that was partially just how the game was called. It was, they really let them play, but also you saw the Blues try and take advantage of the skill game and really try and make it a game after the Avs started dominating them, really the pace of the game, second period on. You saw the Blues try and play that way, and nobody competes with the Avs that way. It's incredible to see what this team can do. They dominate puck possession. That was the one thing. I think, was it you yesterday saying, I'm not sure what the power play, or maybe it was Stoke saying yesterday, I'm not sure what was wrong with the power play. What was wrong with the Avs power play is St. Louis did a great job not allowing them space to operate, and so you didn't really see the Avs power play find traction. And so when I look at this team tonight, I expect more penalties tonight. I expect kind of a regression to the mean there. I think you're going to see some calls influence this game, and you're going to see the Avs penalty kill, which obviously got burned in that really, really bad change. I mean, that was just a, yep. I don't know what they were thinking. Honestly, it was the end of a long shift, but somebody's always got to stay back out there if the puck does not clear, especially last man back. Point is here is that I think you'll see St. Louis make some adjustments. What they are, I'll be very interested to see, but for the Avalanche, What's hilarious about it is they didn't really make adjustments. They played a little bit more dump and attack the second and third period, but you saw a team that went into the locker room at the end of the first intermission, down one, played about as poorly as they can per their standards,
mm-hmm.
and then they just came out and took the game over.
Yeah.
Binnington stood on his head, but that was a game the Avalanche had complete control of.
I mean, they should have won 5-1. They should have won 6-1, something along those lines. That's what they deserved in that game. And, you know, that's probably what it's going to look like moving forward. I don't see any reason why that's going to change. There's just that small part of me that wonders, have we seen the best offensive outpouring from the Blues? Because they did show up a little bit, and they did try to get a little bit more defensive, they weren't as aggressive on the offensive side because they were trying to protect an early lead there. You know, okay, cool. The longer the series goes on, you know what's inevitable. You get frustrated. You get guys that are going to get a little bit more physical. There's probably going to be more time in the box, like you just mentioned. You saw what happened when Shen ended up in the box, and I'd be ticked off too, by the way. If that guy called on me, I'd be ticked off. Now, I wouldn't be doing what he was doing in the box.
Who is all I have to say to him. The Devon Taves call before that, I think it was a makeup call the other direction, frankly.
Could have been. I mean, I wouldn't have been doing what he was doing in the box, but you saw the frustration.
Right.
And the frustration is going to mount the longer the series goes on, because you realize we are just absolutely getting dominated. And when you get dominated, well, all that you've got left is to be little punks out there and try to poke and prod.
When you see that out of your opponent, what do you think as someone, what would you think as someone on the other side of that?
Yeah, we got him right where we want him. There's no question. Now I do, as a competitor, I certainly do understand his point of view on that. Like, that was a garbage call for sure. It shouldn't have been called. And he feels like, well, maybe I just lost the game, but really I feel like the ref just lost the game for us.
Right.
And so he was ticked off in the box, but you can't do that, because when the second you do that, you expose what your emotions are really feeling, and you expose that you're already feeling desperate in game one, and they should have. They were insanely lucky to still be in that game.
We've got two questions here on the text line. One is for you. Tyler, do you think Wayne Gretzky is also rethinking his Blues pick? Because Wayne Gretzky was 8-for-8 in the first round series projections, and he had St. Louis winning this series. Do you think the great one is second-guessing himself?
I would love to know his rationale behind that. I really would. I don't think that anybody's seen any explanation. I mean, he's got his bracket. He picked it. He went 8-for-8. He picked the Avalanche to lose against the Blues in round two. I haven't heard the justification for that. But I would really love to know why Wayne Gretzky looked at that matchup and was like, is it just the second round thing? Is it the fact that the Avs haven't been past the second round in 21 years? Is it looking at the organization, like just saying they're snake bit? Or was it a matchup thing that he saw with the Blues? I don't know why he picked that.
Well, I think it was a popular pick because the Blues had been there and done that before, and the Avs swept them last year. And so I think people expected a better St. Louis team to be able to come out and handle it. But the national audience hasn't quite grasped, and again, until very recently, what's going on here with this team. This team doesn't have weaknesses. And I'm not saying that because I'm a homer. I'm saying it objectively. They did a cavity search and said, where are the cracks in the foundation here that yep. led to all of the heartbreak and all of the failure? And Joe addressed all of them.
Yeah.
He addressed every last one of them. They don't have that anymore. And the guy, and this is a good tie-in to the other question I want to get to here on the text line. The only question mark moving forward was, could Darcy prove it in the playoffs? And was Sam Girard going to be a giant liability? And that's where I lead into my question here. Matt, have you changed your opinion on Girard based upon how he played on Tuesday? He wasn't perfect, but certainly he wasn't a liability. And you could argue he was actually one of their best players on the ice the other night. I want to see more. I want to see more. Talk about stepping up in a giant moment. Girard and Manson playing the way they did on Tuesday night, coinciding with the fact that collectively, probably the worst game I've seen from Kale and Devon in 6 months. So when you're talking about guys stepping up in the moment and the depth on this team, look no further than what those two did. Obviously, I wouldn't say it was a clear game, but yes, was I impressed with him? Yes, was I impressed he stepped up? Yes, do I need to see more? You better believe it. So have I changed my opinion on him? We'll see. As this playoffs gets deeper, they will need him more and more. And certainly, if he plays like he did on Tuesday night, he will go a long way into stepping up and being what this team needs. So I just had to address those two really quickly. The one thing I wanted to ask from you is, did you feel like Darcy had any rust?
No, I didn't. I didn't feel it. Look, he didn't get challenged all too often, but he made a handful of really good saves. Was there rust? I don't know. He kind of got put in a bad spot on that first one. You could have made a miraculous save, I suppose. But I thought for a guy that wasn't getting a whole lot of action, I got to think that's got to be so challenging as a goaltender. I mean, I would want the action. I'm not saying I'd want all the action that Bennington had, but I would want action over the course of the game just to feel like I'm in it, right? I mean, the longer it goes on, you kind of put your guard down a little bit. I didn't feel the rust, but it feels like you're implying that maybe you saw some.
Well, I was just curious because the Avs had 9 days off, right? And Darcy actually had, what, 12 to 13 days off, including coming back from that eye injury. So I felt like he was just a little bit shakier than he was in the first series. But I have to give him credit. He came up really big in the third period several different times. And like you said, you know, was he tested? Not really. In third period and overtime, the Avs outchanced St. Louis 17-1 in the high danger areas. So no, yeah, he wasn't really tested. There's actually a lot more to get into there. And I'm curious to know if you agree with me that maybe the way game one went was actually a benefit to the Avs. But right now on the television at Southern Hills, the PGA Championship is going on. And we're watching the live leaderboard here. And look who's playing like it's a Sunday and he's trying to backdoor a top 10. It's Rory McIlroy leading the tournament in the clubhouse, shot a 65, 5-under today. That is a very big result from Rory. We'll see if he can keep it going, but because his latest history in Masters has been a little bit tumultuous. So we'll see. Yep. That is the update there. I believe Tiger finished, what was it, 4-over?
He was 4-over. He started out looking pretty good. I put out a tweet right after the first one when he ends up, he gets his first birdie, and I'm like, all right, take it to the bank. Tiger's playing better than he did at the Masters. Either take it to the bank or screenshot this and make fun of me later. I'm getting a handful of screenshots already coming my way, making fun of me for it. I wish Tiger would be able to string it together because he's great for golf, and golf needs Tiger Woods. There's no question that golf needs Tiger Woods. But there were a handful of great stories. John Daly, what a story that was, man. John Daly comes out, he gets a birdie on hole number one, just pipes one with his driver, gets the birdie.
Big JD.
Man, I saw there was this guy, there was this reporter that was following him the whole round, and he said the final tally of literally everything that went into John Daly's body over 18 holes, 21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut butter M&Ms, and 0 ounces of water. I mean, that guy
is a diet of champions.
That guy is unbelievable. He seriously is like he is a walking movie.
So that's 21 darts per hole. It's 21 darts per 18.
My gosh.
So which hole was it that he got a little bit, you know,
maybe
a little stressed out? Maybe he was in the bunker and had to pull one out right after a bad drive.
I guess. I mean, it's kind of funny to me.
12 Diet Cokes? How are you just not in a... just shaking.
Oh my
after
gosh!
That.
My head hurts just thinking about the headache I would have after that. That's nuts. 0 ounces of water.
That's wild.
I mean, John Daly, unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Man.
So that's the PGA Championship. That stuff is going on right now. Obviously, Phil Mickelson not participating after he won it last year. And, of course, all of the stuff that's happened with him in the Saudi tournament and the PGA Tour that's been well documented. We don't need to get into that. As far as the Broncos go, there were three players that spoke today at Dove Valley: Albert Okwuegbunam, Quinn Meinerz, and Malik Reed. I think what's really interesting is to kind of take a look, Tyler, first at Albert Okwuegbunam and see what the Broncos' number one tight end thinks about Russell Wilson's impact within this offense.
It's coming.
It's coming.
You got to tee him up, Lou.
I think Russ has done a really good job of, always having something to say, always having a pointer to, anything we're installing, anything we're doing. He always has something to add on to it and just kind of helped help our offense and players evolve and adapt. So it could just be like a little detail about protection. It could be a little detail about coverage, what we might do if we see this look. So I think that's one thing, directly on the field he's been doing a really good job of.
Everybody says great things about Russ. Breaking news. Everybody likes having Russell Wilson on their team. You called Albert Okwuegbunam the number one tight end. I say zero chance. No,
really?
Chance. Day one, there's no chance. Dulcich will be the number one tight end. This team lets you know what they think about Albert Okwuegbunam. When you go out in the offseason, number one, they didn't want to trade Noah Fant, but the Seahawks asked for him, and you certainly weren't going to draw the line in the sand at Noah Fant. So you traded away Noah Fant, but they went out and they got three tight ends. The first guy they signed, that tells you a lot about what they thought about Albert Okwuegbunam. They got Eric Tomlinson. He is pretty much relevant in the big picture, but he's a blocking tight end that is the complete opposite of Albert Okwuegbunam. They brought back Eric Talbert as well, a well-rounded tight end who had a great training camp last year. And then they drafted Greg Dulcich. Greg will be the number one tight end on this team. I think it's obvious the Broncos have told us what their thoughts are on Albert Okwuegbunam. They are not that high on him, and they're going to be eager to get their young draft pick out there on the field because Greg is now the new regime's guy. That's the new regime's guy. Albert Okwuegbunam, he doesn't belong to anybody out there.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
You think right away week one?
I do. Yep, week one. Will he literally be the first tight end on the field?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe they line up in some sort of five wide and they put Albert O outspread. Albert Okwuegbunam, he'll have a role in this team, because there's always a role for a wide receiver that can play the tight end spot. It's the biggest mismatch in the NFL, by far the biggest mismatch, because you get these tight ends that just don't have the speed. They can't hang with these tight ends that have got wide receiver speed. It's a huge mismatch. So Albert will have a role on this team, but Greg will be, when it's all said and done, there's no question Greg Dulcich will be the number one guy on this team.
Well, I was going to get into something else, but now that you bring that up, explain to me how you think he's going to be used within this offense. Is it going to be more Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, or is he going to be more along the offensive line?
Well, in this offense, you got to be able to block as a tight end, and that's why they went out and they made the moves they did, because Alberto, he doesn't block. And look, Greg Dulcich, he's not a good blocker either. Let's make that very, very clear. I've watched a lot of film on Greg. That is definitely not a strong suit for him, but he's better than Albert Okwuegbunam. And in this offense, you have to have a tight end that can line up attached to the line of scrimmage on first and second down, that can be in the running game, and that's where you really start to hit him, is the play action where you line up, make it look like it's a heavy formation, but then you use the tight ends. Tight ends won't be a huge feature of this team. Russ Wilson has never really made a tight end a feature that he goes to, but he will be a big role.
Didn't Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson used to play?
Jimmy had one decent year with Russell, and he's had some tight ends that have had reasonable numbers, but he's never featured a tight end.
Okay. Yeah, no, you definitely hasn't. That's just the one name that comes to mind. I mean, you think about everybody else. Disley, Hollister, these are guys you would never, your casual would have no idea you think Hollister's a clothing
Olson
brand.
For a minute, too.
Yeah, exactly, at the tail end of his career, right? So, water cooler is coming up next, but I am in for DMAC today, Matt Smith with Tyler Palumbus, and I'm in because DMAC is in Boston with his family, attending the services of his late brother. Unfortunately, if you hadn't heard about that, I think it's still up on the website there. But DMAC, unfortunately, lost his brother in a terrible accident a couple weeks ago. And our hearts are with him, and we're thinking about him today. And his brother was just a brilliant man who was, I think it was the lead radiologist at Burlington Hospital.
He was.
And worked, did some great things with cancer research. And DMAC asked that if you'd like to honor him in a different way that all donations can go to Pedal with Columbus, which I thought was very, very cool.
Extremely kind of DMACC. You know, unfortunately, we've had a lot of tragedy at the radio station here over the last year. A lot of loss, sadly. And it's been some tragic stuff as well. And, you know, DMACC, man, when you go through the tough times, you just realize how close you are to human beings. And totally with DMACC, and so many people are. I'm honored that he would direct the donations to Pedal with Columbus to beat ovarian cancer. But it's certainly not about that. It's just keep your thoughts and prayers with DMACC as they have the memorial. I believe that's going on today, actually.
So. Yeah. So think some good thoughts. Send some good vibes. We certainly are from here back in Denver. It's Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbis here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
Well, we find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and DMACC.
What would you say you do here?
I'm going to hit it hard. I'm going to grip it, rip it. I'm going to rip it and sip it. Ain't changing.
John
that is,
Daly.
That is relevant.
Yes, it is. John Daly. He is out and about walking the course, maybe doing it heavily breathing at Southern Hills at the PGA Championship. And typically, the goal in golf is you want to get the lowest score possible.
Right.
But, boy, was he racking up the numbers out there on the course, Tyler.
John Daly. He was the early talk of the tournament. He starts off, he rips one with his first drive. That dude, man, his swing is so pure. He's got so much power, and it has never left him. Rips one right down the fairway, gets birdie to start it off, and now it's the uproar, right? Because nobody can create controversy and can create a following like John Daly. Somebody, there was a reporter that was following him that counted up everything that he was eating and drinking over the course of the round, or consuming, and over the course of 18 holes, John Daly consumed 21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, 6 packs of peanut butter M&Ms, and 0 ounces of water. That is, I guess, the definition of peak male performance nowadays.
Yeah, and we joke about it, but I do believe he's battling bladder cancer right now. And, you know, at this point,
I would imagine he's battling stuff.
Yeah, at this point, it's not too hard to see why he may be. You know, they're not living the healthiest of lifestyles here, unfortunately.
No.
12 Diet Cokes and 21 heaters is quite the first round. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll see him around on the weekend.
I mean, that is not alcohol, but I don't think I would be standing after all of that.
Yeah, 12 Diet Cokes and no water would have me shaking like a maraca by the time I made the turn.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine what my head would feel like.
You don't hit the quarterback during practice!
My shoulder!
He was a receiver! Andy was in my zone! Anybody who comes in my zone gets laid out! That's what I do! I lay people out!
Tyler, the University of Colorado already had an uphill battle for relevance, let alone competing for a conference championship again. Of course, the last time they were there was 2016 when they made the Pac-12 championship game and got boat raced by Washington in Santa Clara. But
I was there. I was on the call.
I remember
working the game.
You?
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah, that, you remember the old purple smoke that came out and stayed over the field for about one quarter?
I do, yes.
Yeah, I think there must have been some hallucinogens in that because Washington got on top early and never looked back in that game.
Exactly.
Pac-12 has gotten rid of divisions. There will not be a Pac-12 North and a Pac-12 South after next year. But this year, they mean very little other than for scheduling purposes, as now the Pac-12 has reshifted and The conference championship will no longer be Pac-12 North champion, Pac-12 South champion. The teams with the two highest winning percentages will square off in the conference championship. So see you. Good luck. It just got harder.
You know, this is catch 22 because obviously it's going to make things difficult for the University of Colorado. It's going to make things difficult for a lot of smaller schools. There's stuff going on in college football right now, college athletics, that it's just going to make things more difficult for schools like the University of Colorado. But inherently, I'm actually a fan of it. I'm always an advocate for the best teams being in the championship, and it doesn't always work out that way when you've got it lined up based off divisions. You don't always have the two best teams that are in the championship. Matter of fact, was it that, or was it the next year? There was something weird going on with the Pac-12. I feel like it was the next year, maybe.
It was a tiebreaker.
Yeah. Oregon got...
left out.
And Colorado, there was like, Colorado might have benefited from it or something, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I can't remember exactly how it shook out.
But there was something that shook loose with that. I, generally speaking, I want the best teams in the championship, so I guess I'm a fan of it, despite the fact that it's going to make things more difficult for CU.
I didn't know they made ninth place ribbons.
Oh, Jack, they got them all the way up to 10th place.
Oh.
Well, in the area of participation trophies, I don't think anyone's ever received as big of a participation trophy that Joel Embiid just got from the city council in Philadelphia. The Philly City Council just passed a resolution that names Joel Embiid our MVP. Quote, unquote, most valuable Philadelphian.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute.
Are you sour much?
Wow. I mean, this is like giving a parade for the Super Bowl loser. Like, well, yeah, guys, you lost. You didn't earn the parade, okay? You didn't earn the MVP. You don't deserve the MVP. Now, Joel Embiid, I'm not going to be mad at anybody that says that he earned the MVP. He had one hell of a season, but he didn't earn it. And I mean, honestly, as a guy, as a player, I think I'd be like, I don't want that. I don't want that. Don't be.
Hell
actually,
no.
You're actually embarrassing me right now. You're drawing more attention to the fact that I did not get it. I didn't earn it. I didn't win it.
And I'm out of the playoffs.
Yeah, and now you come up with some stupid award like this. That's embarrassing.
Council members Jones, Council President Clark, Parker, Johnson, Gautier, Jim, Bass, Dome, Green, Sequila, Thomas, Brooks, Gilmore, Richardson, O'Neill, and Sanchez all got together and decided that this was a great idea and actually put it on government letterhead that the Philly City Council has decided to award Joel Embiid with an MVP.
But I think there was a Jefferson in there, too.
Yeah, there must have been, and a Washington most likely as well. But, I mean, I can't think of anything more pathetic. If I were Joel Embiid, I would distance myself as far as I possibly could from this. And, by the way, for most valuable Philadelphian for this MVP, Jokic got snubbed.
There he did. Yes, he did.
Oh, can you believe that? The most valuable Philadelphian? Pathetic is that?
I mean, it really is a pathetic look. The participation trophy stuff, that's got to go away. It certainly needs to go away at the professional level. You know, I got nothing wrong with honoring a local legend, right? I mean, if you want to come up with a way to celebrate Joel Embiid, he's worthy of being celebrated. I got to read it.
Okay, so this is actually from the resolution passed by the city council. This is the end of it. Whereas Joel Embiid has been a dedicated team member of the 76ers for years, he has gained numerous accolades and led the team through numerous games and tough battles on their way to victory. And whereas Joel Embiid is deserving of the distinction of MVP, now, therefore, be it.
Well, hey, congratulations, Joel. Congratulations
on your MVP. So exciting. The Drive rolls on next. Matt Smith in for Tyler Palumbus. In for DMAC with Tyler Palumbus.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and DMAC on Denver's Sports Station. 104.3 The Fan.
We are 1 week from Top Gun, Maverick, hitting theaters. I hope you're as excited as I am.
I'm fired up, dude. Cannot wait. Yeah, bought the tickets and all. No, actually, I didn't.
No.
I'll watch it. Hey, don't hear me wrong. I'm not a Top Gun hater.
In like 6 months on a 80-inch screen.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I will watch it from the comfort of my own couch, or I might find another way.
It's time to turn and burn, baby. And right now on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline.
Hey, okay, never mind. We're bringing
it.
We'll bring it in. Back to Top Gun.
Okay, good. Yes, I hope you will, and I expect you to. We're bringing in Chris Kerber, who's the radio play-by-play broadcaster of the St. Louis Blues and a contributor on 101.1 ESPN in St. Louis. Chris, how are you doing this afternoon? Are you enjoying the Mile High City?
I am, fellas. Actually, just kind of walking around downtown right now. Having a good time. The weather has been great. The city's treated us well as always. Walked in and found Scruffy Murphy's yesterday.
Okay.
That may become my home away from home during this series. But all good. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, Chris, I hate to break it to you, but this might be your only opportunity. You might not be here too long, buddy.
Oh, nice.
Chris, I'm curious. After the overtime game, you know, game one, they really had a chance. Jordan played extremely well in net, gave him a chance to win that hockey game. What do you think the mood is heading here into game two?
Well, if anybody knows the game of hockey or follows it, you know that there's a chance that this series could go, you know, a whole bunch of different ways. And one of the keys is the veteran nature of this Blues team. There was really a no panic, what me worry attitude to this team this morning. And it's the same thing that you felt in 2019 when they won their Stanley Cup. It was just a process to it. And one of the things that this team has been really good at, and as I think one of the best coaching staffs for, is making adjustments. So we'll see how game two goes. I think, you know, if the Blues can play the puck with a little less yippiness than they had in that last game, you know, I don't know if it results in a win, but it'll definitely result in a more balanced game without a doubt, because Colorado's got some of that higher end with Nathan McKinnon. The Blues are a little bit deeper top to bottom in scoring, and we'll just have to see which one wins out in the end.
Well, you know, when you've got 54 shots on net, I would imagine the score should be about 6-1. That's the way I felt. So, you know, it's hard to think that Bennington could play much better than he did. He played fantastic. But how do you make adjustments to stop that? I mean, what adjustments are we looking at here? What are they going to come out with and be doing different?
Well, I think, you know, when you follow one team, I get it. But if you actually follow other teams, And you see what goes, the Blues have actually been one of the fewest shot teams all season long.
Is that right?
They still had a 109-point season. And the reason is because, and this is, I think, one of the awesome storylines of this series, guys, is the fact that the Colorado Avalanche throw everything at the net. They crash the net hard. They're one of the best net front teams, I think, in the National Hockey League.
Agreed.
The Blues play a different style where if they don't like the shot, they try to hold on to the puck. Mm-hmm. And that's where they failed in game number one. They couldn't hold on to the puck, and they didn't get enough shots. Like, even in overtime, I went back and I rewatched overtime today. They did a great job a couple times of getting out of the zone,
but
they just couldn't generate it to the net. As a matter of fact, Darcy Kuemper only froze two pucks all game long. So the Blues are a puck possession team. If they can get back to some of that, and that's the big adjustment, they'll make some line changes, but if they can get to that part of the game, it will be a little more balanced, and that's how you slow them down. If they try to just... If the Blues try to do what they did, which is just whip it out, try to skate onto the puck, the Colorado defense is too good to get to it, and then you can't catch them. So, you know, they're going to have to do a better job, and the adjustment for the Blues has got to be on breaking out of the zone. It's got to be on making sure your passes are clean. And then when you get it in, you've got to make sure you get it into a spot on the forecheck where you can bang for it to get it back. You don't do those three things, you're darn right, this series could end in four games.
Well, the Blues, there's no question they're one of the best offensive teams in the NHL. I mean, you've got what's the stat? There's like seven guys with 20
guys.
Goals or more.
Yeah, nine.
I mean, that is pretty insane. And I would expect at some point that shows up. But it seems like from the outside, most people say when you play the Avalanche, you just got to get physical. I wouldn't say that's necessarily what we saw, but I think the longer the series goes on, that's what happens. Do you foresee things getting a little bit more chippy out there, or do you think Blues try to go the other way and try to get a little bit more finesse and just get more shots on net?
Yeah, you know, the thing is for me, it's how they define physical. If the Blues are trying to run to make the big hit, that's going to play in Colorado's favor. St. Louis tried that in game three against Minnesota, and the game really went awry. You know, so the physicality has to come in making a hit when you're there and it's there to be made. And then that's where I think the physicality is really going to come. I think the Blues were uncharacteristically poor on the faceoff dot. That was a big part of that one. And that had them chasing around a little bit more. Outside of Ryan O'Reilly, I don't think they had anybody over 20% on the faceoff dot. So that's a huge storyline tonight. We'll see how that goes. But I also think, guys, too, that if the Blues can get in on the forecheck a little bit better and a little bit more, then you start to see some of that balanced offense that they have come around. And we'll see what happens. He's going to put Robert Thomas with Jordan Kyrou. Mm. Those two seem to always give each other a bit of a spark. And you hope it adds up to it. But the ultimate key, and I asked Craig Berube about this one before game one, and it showed. Look, in the last 11 games that the Blues have played here in Denver, Colorado's outscored the Blues 18-9 in the second period. If the Blues don't find a way to manage the puck better in the second period, to make line changes a little bit easier, this is a very difficult place to win. And so to me, another big key tonight is going to be period number two and see if the Blues can balance that out.
We are talking to Chris Kerber, who's the play-by-play voice of the St. Louis Blues for 101 ESPN. Chris, you mentioned kind of slowing the pace of play down there, and I felt like they did a very good job of that after they got on the board in the first period. But do they really think they can slow the pace and limit possessions over the course of a seven-game series, or do you think Berube feels sure. That's the only way they have a shot?
No, I mean, no, you have to. I mean, that's the recipe for beating Colorado, you know, and yeah, I think they can. But look, it's an experienced team. It's a good team. It's a veteran team. You know, they know where the errors that they made, and then you try to adjust it. If the Blues can get to their game the way they want to play, it's not you can't physically slow another team down. What you do is you just have to make them chase after you a little bit more. So instead of skating with the puck, they're skating after you with it, and that has to be a puck possession thing that the Blues have to change. If they don't change that, then Colorado's skill and will, I think, can absolutely continue to take over.
All right,
and then you would need four straight games of Jordan Binnington doing what he did, and I don't know that that's what you should expect of your goalie.
All righty, Chris. Well, we really appreciate the time today. We hope you have a great call tonight, and of course, we don't hope the game goes well for you, but, you know, that's just the nature of competition and a friendly rivalry here. Maybe not so friendly.
That part I can completely understand.
Hey, I respect the delusion. You guys got your brains beat in, and somehow you're sitting here, oh, if you watch more than one team. I respect it, Chris, but you're delusional. You got your brains beat in. You got lucky.
All right, we're just teasing
you. When was the last time Colorado got past the second round?
That's what you got.
All right, now he shut us up.
No, that's all he's got. I got it. I respect it.
All right, Chris. All right, Chris, you have a great afternoon, and have a good call, pal.
Thanks.
All right, that is Chris Kerber of 101 ESPN. He's the radio play-by-play.
If you watch more than one team.
Oh, he was razzing.
You know what? I do watch one team. I watch the best team on planet Earth. That's what I watch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've got football at 4 coming up next. We will also circle back to Mission 16W and get us set for Game 2 tonight at Ball Arena. Avs up 1-0. And as you can tell clearly, the Blues feel like they're right in it. It's Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbis here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.